Happy Monday, Bucks fans. It's the Monday Morning Joe podcast. I am Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, one of the Joes writing on the website. 11 years now covering the Buccaneers, 11th season. Crazy. Our 10-year anniversary at JoeBucksFan.com is coming up in August. I think we're going to have some sort of party or free fan appreciation day somewhere. I just want to feed anybody who wants to get fed and high five a little bit, have some fun. I don't know how we're going to do that, when exactly, but the anniversary is August 7th. Something's going to happen. So that's fun. Anyway, Discount Garage Doors, of course, is our presenting sponsor. Visit them at dgdoors.com. A little bit more about them later. The draft, 2.5 weeks away. 2.5 weeks away. A lot to think about with the draft. And it's not just about picking a player. It's about team building. It's about getting the Bucks out of this stupid rut. You know, over the weekend, I was talking to my daughter, who's one of my daughters is 10, really into sports. She saw me watching. She's a Rays fan, so feel bad for the poor girl. We went on opening day and they won, and now they've lost 8 in a row and they look like garbage. So, you know, kids, they learn hard lessons with sports. And, you know, she's feeling it, taking it hard right now. But the Bucks, I was sitting around, you know, I'm JoeBucksFan.com, right? So I'm watching the Bucks and the Panthers game over again over the weekend. And she's checking out what I'm watching. And she starts asking about why the Bucks suck and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the kids want to know. And I'm sitting here and the conversation goes back to the Gruden days and the glory years. And I've feel like a freaking old man talking about a good football team that existed 12, 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, that's not the way it should be when you're in a fan of a team in a four-team division and in this kind of league with parity and everything else. That, I think, speaks to the core issue and the core angst and passion as well at the same time that flows through Bucks fans, because we just want to end this madness, end this nonsense of being in a perpetual state of stink with a few blips along the way of feeling good about something that maybe isn't exactly real. It's just been a long time. And when you start talking about the Bucks or start explaining to a kid, and you just feel like you're a freaking fossil because it's been so long that the Bucks have been a team that people care about on a grand scale, on a national scale, a team that people take notice of. You know, at the NFL owners meetings, I was there 2 weeks ago. I spent the full, I spent 3 days there. So I spent a lot of time talking to NFL movers and shakers, trying to talk to them, getting nuggets here and there, media guys, owners, general managers, whoever, coaches. I'm not sure why Marvin Lewis doesn't like me, and it's bizarre because Marvin Lewis, I am not a black man, but Marvin Lewis is a black man, and he looks, the reason I bring this up is that he is almost a dead ringer from my father, who had passed away years ago, but so I'm like drawn to Marvin Lewis, like he's the black version of my dad, and I go talk to him, and yeah, he's okay, nice guy, but the minute I start talking football with him or something, he doesn't want to talk to me, I don't know why. But it's bizarre. Just imagine you have a dead relative. Somebody looks exactly like him. And anyway, I don't know. I just felt I had to share that. The Bucks, though, the regime, one of the things I came away with at the owners' meetings is that the regime understands Jason Light, Dirk Cutter. They are starting to come around, or not come around, but they get that fans are carrying all this baggage. They're carrying baggage of 10 years, no playoffs, the longest drought in the NFC. Now, that's not Dirk Cutter's fault, right? But in a sense, it goes to how we feel about the head coach and whether we believe in whether he knows what he's doing. We're carrying that baggage, whether you want to believe it, acknowledge it or not. The same old Bucks, the loser mentality, that affects fans a little bit. It really does. And it affects an organization. And you have to get away from it to realize it in its full entirety. Now, I'm not saying all of you and us here at JoeBucksFan.com are living in a dream world and we're out of touch. But a point is the coaches get it. and Jason Light gets it. And there, of course, Jason Light in his fifth year is a little bit more of a part of this than Dirk Cutter. But, you know, they understand that the fans want it right now. And the no more excuses, enough is enough. Last year was a kick in the balls. And this year has got to be different. And I hope that the fans, you know, I don't even want to say have a little patience, but it's going to require, if you believe in this coach, if you believe in Jason Light, if you believe in what's going to go on here, it's going to take a little bit of patience, right? You're going to have to deal with some losing, and maybe that's 9-7. Maybe that's 8-8 this year. I'm leaning more 8-8 right now. If somebody made me make a stupid projection in April, but it's going to take a little bit of patience. And I'm not telling you to have patience. I'm not telling you what to think, but reality sets in. You know, I talked to a lot of people from the Falcons. I've got a couple of friends associated with the Panthers I've spoken to recently. Saints are obviously a very good team who the Bucs beat to close the season. There's not a massive gap between these teams, but the Bucs can't fix this whole thing in a year and go to the Super Bowl. But you know what? No excuses. They got to start well. They got to play good football. And we have to feel confident in what they're doing. And right now, Bucs fans feel pretty good. The Jason Pierre-Paul move, excellent move. And that put us in this mindset. Now, I talked to Jason Light at great length at the owners' meetings about some of the players that he was thinking of getting, that he was planning to get or wanted. But he really felt that the JPP thing was going to pan out. And eventually, at some point, with the team Light was looking to build, he couldn't go sign X guy and Y guy and then sign JPP as well. He had to gamble that he could get his guy, who the Bucks, make no mistake, the Bucks believe that Jason Pierre-Paul is a big step better than Robert Quinn and a guy who was worth giving up a third-round draft pick. Not just signing as a free agent, a guy worth parting with a third-round pick. I'll just jump to the draft right here. We all get all crazy, all hot in the pants, all freaking out over the draft and who to pick and who should we pick and what do we need and what don't we need. And it drives fans wild, and I love it. I love every minute of it, right? You just got to love the passion and the conviction that fans have toward who they want, who they don't want, what the team should do. You love it. But the Bucks, if you want to be a little bit objective, unless something changes, the Bucks have painted themselves into a huge corner. Huge. They need a running back, at least a guy who has number one running back potential, preferably a guy who's going to compete with Peyton Barber for that number one spot. And they're desperate for a cornerback, desperate, beyond desperate. Now, I still think the Bucks are going to make a move or two before the draft. It makes sense. Signing somebody, there are still guys out there, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, I don't know. There are some guys out there, or at least Robert McClain, maybe a draft day trade. We'll see. But right now they're painted into a corner, and perhaps they wait till after the draft. Perhaps Jason Light waits till August to get more cornerback depth. But they also have no third round pick. So logic says first two rounds, corner, running back, period. That's what logic says. But is that good for the team long haul? That may be good short term, but is that the right move long term? Now, what do you care about? That's really what is another big question. Do you care about long term more than you care about short term? Do you believe short term in changing the culture and winning sooner and being a more balanced team and keeping your head coach breeds long term success? There's a lot of ways to look at the draft, and the draft is about team building as much as it is filling holes. Now, Jason Light has been a bad team builder. He's made some good draft picks, but he's been a bad team builder. But on the flip side of that, Light's there to just get the best groceries he can. It's up to the coach to build the team around the talent. And so, you know, the Bucks are sitting there with two great tight ends, two great wide receivers. They've got a solid offensive line, whether you want to believe it or not. And they've got depth at receiver. They've got Godwin. You know, a lot of teams put three wide receivers on the field at once. The Bucks can do that more often. They've also got Humphreys, who's got his value. They got a quarterback who's proven he can do a lot of good things in addition to a lot of bad things. It's up to Cutter to get this thing humming. I can't sit around and blame Jason Light, but when you look at the overarching team building, that's really the skill of the general manager. And Jason Light has a lot to prove in that area. At the owners' meetings, I got a chance to hang out with Donald Penn. He was there for a charity event on whatever day it was. He was there on Monday for the charity event. I talked to him right after the charity event that he was helping coach some kids. Talked to him for a while, and then I saw him at the big party for the owners, the players, or not, the players who were there, anybody connected with the NFL who's there, media, all the national media, the general managers, everybody's out there. It's amazing they let guys like us in. I'm blown away every time. It's like my goal was to eat $200 worth of food, and I think I might have pulled it off. Like, but that's how high-end everything was as far as the food and the alcohol and all that. So, but talking to Penn, again, guy's got a lot of great information. He's been a friend for a long time. But talking to him, you start to realize that, you know what, or it starts to remind me of the Bucks just haven't, there was no reason to get rid of Penn at the time. So did they get better? Was it a good team building move to get rid of Donald Penn? Right? If you keep Donald Penn in 2014, you don't waste the money on Anthony Collins. You spend the money somewhere else. And then in 2015, you're not going to use your top second round pick on, which I think was the first or second pick of the second round, on Donovan Smith. So how does the team build if you had retained Donald Penn? And of course, drafting is about the moves you make and the moves you don't make, right? Those are the ones we don't talk about, the moves that were not made. I asked Jason Light when we were having some vodka at the owners' meetings, talking about all kinds of things. I asked him if he's that guy who goes back and studies all the draft moves, right? If you screw up, do you go back, Jason? Do you go back and say, why did we screw up? What is everything that led to screwing this up? When you hit on a draft pick, do you go back and say, all right, let's study everything we did to just determine that this guy was the right pick, that Godwin was our guy in the third round? What went into that? Who did we not take? Who did we take? Well, obviously, Godwin is the guy we took, but who'd you reevaluate the pick from a broad perspective, not just the player? And I asked Light about that. I can't sit here and share private conversations. Can't do it. Otherwise, nobody will talk, and these things are all private conversations. And I've got plenty of some of those to share. But with Light, what I'll say is, yeah, Jason is that guy. He gave me a lot of detail on stuff that they do to go back, and he sort of says he is that guy to the nth degree. He told the story about him and Belichick where it sort of cemented that for Light when he was working for Belichick. I believe he was director of player personnel. Light said Belichick wasn't a guy who talked to his staff individually a lot, but he seemed to know everything that was going on, and he would often assign tasks to certain guys and ask for, you know, give me a report, Jason, Bill, blah, blah, blah. Give me a report on this in 3 weeks. Dive into this. Give it everything you got. That kind of thing. So Light told me of a task that Belichick gave him to study as it related to the draft, and Light had to put together a report in 4 or 5 weeks. Again, I'm not going to go into the details, but he gives the report to Belichick, who looks at it and says, good work, that's what I thought. Anyway, that was an example Light gave of how he's been very much in tune with studying picks on a broader level to figure out why certain guys work, certain positions work. And the point is, the Bucks do go back and study. Now, if every day you're studying your screwed up garage door that won't go up, won't go down, is cracked, looks terrible, looks ugly, is killing the street value, the appearance value of your home, then you need to call Discount Garage Doors, 1-866-420-DOOR, 1-866-420-DOOR, or their website, dgdoors.com. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code, 7 days a week, free service call. They'll come to your home. They'll give you a diagnosis of the problem. Or they'll just lay out the price for a new garage door. No pressure, no cost, nothing until you get work done if you decide to do it. 7 days a week, great local company, Discount Garage Doors. This is a Tampa Bay area company that services across Florida. Discount Garage Doors, the name says it all. This is where you want to go, licensed, insured, great reputation. Their website is really, really good. DGDoors.com. Check them out. Hey, I referenced the NFL owners meetings, and it's a really cool time for me in one major way that I can relate to you guys, the fans. And I'm a fan myself. But you know who else is a fan? Team Glazer. These guys, and I've been lived a lot of years, I've worked in a lot of fields where I've had to interact with a lot of different people and see through people and see through a lot of BS and all this other stuff. I honestly feel, having many discussions with Team Glazer, and I'm not just talking about the 10 or 12 minutes that's on the record where we write stories about, you heard some of the audio on the website and saw some of the stories. I've had a chance at these meetings to have personal private conversations with Team Glazer about football and about the fans and about media coverage. And what I can say is these guys are fans, fans at the core, really fans at the core. Now, let's go back 2011, 2010, 2009. I'm not talking about that. When the Bucs were not spending money and it appeared the team was going on the cheap and that they weren't playing to win at all costs. We could see that. Anybody could see that without the salary cap structure that's in place now and the salary floor. The Bucs were near the bottom, and I can't say with confidence they were doing everything they could to win. But a different time, different era, different discussion, and maybe they were in their minds doing the right thing. Not the point. I'm talking about now and lately and my last 4 years of getting to know Team Glazer and really having intense conversations with them on just coverage and fun and the stuff that is about Buccaneers fanship and where they are as fans. And they do understand the frustrations of the fans. They do get it. Do they read JoeBucksFan.com every morning like a lot of you do as part of their religion? Yeah, I'm going to say they do. And everybody at One Buck Place knows it. But it's not about, yo, Team Glazer reads Joe Bucks Fan. It's about they are fans. They care in many of the same ways, really all the same ways that you do. Now, I'm not equating Team Glazer to the common man. Don't be ridiculous. But it's always refreshing to really believe in my core that the ownership, they're fans, man. They are pounding their fists against the wall just like you were last year. They were just kicked in the groin, stomped. And man, it probably took a lot of fortitude for them to not fire Dirk Koetter. And I thought one of the more interesting things out of the owners' meetings was Joel Glazer really being adamant, and we're going to play this audio. We got permission to play the audio sometime this week. Play the actual audio of him explaining that, no, the Glazers didn't tell Jason Light to pick Roberto Aguayo. I had to ask, right? I had to get that on the record. And, that they never tell a GM who to pick. And that doesn't mean that there's not swaying of that you don't know your boss's desire, right? People lose track of that. You might know your boss's desire, but it doesn't mean you're going to do it every time. You just need to win, right? You need to be successful. So that's the nuance there. To wrap that up, really, the core, Joel Glazer, Team Glazer, it's just comforting to me to know that these guys, they would be at the draft party 2 weeks from Thursday night, Buffalo Wild Wings, South Tampa, wearing Stick Carriers shirts if they weren't the owners, if they weren't Team Glazer. It's just that they do care on that level. And I feel as someone who understands what it's like to be a hardcore Bucs fan 24/7, they're there. They're in that mindset, especially Joel Glazer. I just believe that he's right there with all of us. All except he's got a lot more zeros in the bank, but it's comforting. And maybe that's why the Bucs are losing, right? Maybe you could say the owners operate too much like fans have been, but I don't think it's about that. It's just good to know, because it could be the alternative, right? The owners could not care. They could just be all about spreadsheets and all the stuff that we fans don't give a crap about. We just want to win. And it's good to know ownership is right there with us. For me, as a guy who's able to confirm that and feel it, really feel it firsthand. Now, I mentioned the draft party. 2 weeks from Thursday night, Buffalo Wild Wings, South Tampa. Huge location, but there's going to be a massive outdoor tent and outdoor watching of the draft. A whole huge party. I mean, it's going to be outrageous. Last year's was fantastic in Clearwater. About 350 fans crammed in. Several fans left. I was at the door for a while. They didn't want to stand. Well, this year we've got great standing opportunities outside if you want to hang out. It's going to be more of a block party. Plus, the location itself is huge, so you'll be able to get a table. Get there at 6. That's when the $20 all-you-can-eat buffet kicks off. All kinds of prizes through the night, drink specials, the Miller Lite, Bucks Uncensored, Draft Party, JoeBucksFan.com, the stick carriers, and it goes on Friday night too. So we'll have a little bit more information about that shortly. Now the draft, right? Okay, Joe, who do you want to pick in the draft, man? Who do you want in the draft? Well, I'm a long-term guy. I don't really care short-term as much as some other people do. I'm not as fixated on this year saving jobs and what are they going to do. I'm not there. Just not wired that way with this team right now. I'm trying to be a little more realistic, I'm really just assessing what's in front of me here. I don't see the Bucks as a Super Bowl team. That doesn't make me as less of a fan. It doesn't make you less of a fan. It's just kind of reality. For me, anyway. So, Quentin Nelson, he's way up there on my list. If everybody and their brother, everybody I talked to in Orlando, and you see the film, you hear the analysts, if he is a top shelf Hall of Fame caliber guard talent, then you can't go wrong. You just can't go wrong. You cannot go wrong. And I look at the Bucks now, the way they're constructed with Ryan Jensen and Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith and DeMar Dotson at the end of his career. If you sign Quentin Nelson, this could look like the Buccaneers offensive line of 2007, 2008. And you're like, what? What the hell are you talking about, Joe? But you look at Aaron Sears and Donald Penn and Jeff Fain and Davin Joseph, who was a Pro Bowler, and they signed Zutah, and True Blood wasn't a saloon doors yet. That was immense talent on that line. And they got the job done in 07 and 08. They really did. Now, Aaron Sears fell apart, and things don't last forever. The story there doesn't need to be rehashed, but we haven't had a talented line like that in a long time. And yeah, this could be better. You put Nelson in if he can produce from day one as a kind of guy who we would expect. So I'm all for that. We need a cornerback. I'd rather get one this year than next year. If you believe the guy is a top shelf corner and he's sitting in front of you with the number 7 pick, or you believe you can trade down and get Denzel Ward with the number 12 pick with Buffalo, then do it. You got to get a cornerback. Grimes is on his last legs. Who knows? He hasn't said, I want to play 3 more years. He doesn't say that, right? He wasn't demanding a 2-year contract from the Bucks, which he could have gotten from somebody. So you don't know how long he's going to last. Miko Grimes says, Brent Grimes played last year at 80% all year long. Now, that's how tough he was. That's how banged up he was. So Vernon Hargraves is a bust. If he becomes a good nickel, then he's not a bust. But still, that's not how you're... I mean, it's a long shot at this point with Hargraves. It really is. I hate to say it. The kid is young, but it's a long shot. And do you ever feel that Hargraves has the same dedication level of a Jameis Winston or other rookies that have come through here? I don't feel it. I'm not feeling it at all. But that said, doesn't matter. You need an outside cornerback of quality. And I'd rather add the guy this year than next year when you might be a team that's expected to compete in 2019 as a Super Bowl contender. I don't want a rookie cornerback out there then. I'd rather have him now. Let him be better. Now then the question is, can the Bucks develop a cornerback? Lee DeCamper, you've heard him. The other Joe at JoeBucksFan.com, he's the one who constantly writes, the Bucks have no business drafting a rookie cornerback because they haven't developed one. And the fact is, look, this staff, and that's what he's talking about, this staff, Javion Elliott didn't get better last year. Jude Ajay Barima has gotten hurt. He's out of the league. Vernon Hargraves, we all know the story. Ryan Smith was misevaluated by the defensive staff. And then he was overvalued last year, pegged as the number 3 corner going into the season. And then he was terrible. if we're being honest, Robert McClain was pretty solid, put up some numbers, showed his versatility as a 30-year-old veteran. The guy's still on the street. So the evaluation and the improvement of the cornerbacks, it goes beyond the rookies. It goes to the veterans. Alteron Verner, they thought they would pay him. They paid him $6 million a couple of years ago because they thought he still had something left. He had nothing. He went to Miami. He's out of work. So the failures at cornerback are very much on this coaching staff. So it makes you hesitant to draft a rookie and stick him into that situation. But I look at it as if the rookie's great, he's going to contribute and be a good player. I don't think they're going to screw him up that badly necessarily. But if they screw up, then you know what? The regime, at least the defensive staff, is going to be gone next year. And then you've got a talented guy in there with some experience who can last for another 4 or 5 years. I'm not against drafting the cornerback. They're freaking desperate. Desperate. So if Denzel Ward is my preferred guy in there, is it a bit of a reach at 7? Maybe. But again, if you scout him as a lockdown cornerback who can get it done, then no. I mean, a reach. People only talk reach usually when the guy screws up. Does anybody ever talk about Keanu Neal and how the Falcons screwed up taking a safety that high as a reach? I haven't heard that. Because why? Because Neal's been a good player. And if the guy can play, he can play, and nobody thinks he's a reach. If he's a reach, then all of a sudden they're going back to the draft analysts and the gurus, and oh, he was taking 5 steps too high. You know, come on. It's just not really. There's not a lot of logic in talking about the reach. And look, the trends are always changing, right? So maybe sometimes you want to be ahead of the curve. We saw for years, oh, running backs, you can get them later, get them later, get them later. Good teams don't take a running back early. And then the trend switched back. Right now, it's get that running back early. These are the guys who can instantly impact your franchise. They're job savers. Running backs are job savers. And where are the Bucks now when it comes to saving jobs? That's another big question, right? Do you mortgage your future if Saquon Barkley is still there? If he's there at number 5 and you can make a deal with Denver, even if it's steep, because you got to match what a quarterback needy team is looking to trade with them and you got to get close to that, do you make the reach? Do you make the leap to get Saquon Barkley? Maybe you do. Would you have done that 4 years ago? Nah, I don't think so. Trent Richardson, was that a reach? You know, there have been plenty of guys. Blair Thomas, for you older guys, Blair Thomas out of Penn State. What was he, number 2 pick in the draft for the Jets? Hey, he ran for some yardage. I think he had one good year. Nothing great. Nothing special. He was a bust for his draft slot. I don't know. I'm not big on the running back that high because I don't think you have to do it. And I think every year there's a running back you can draft who can have an impact. And again, is this the year that the Bucks go all the way? I don't know. Lot to consider. A lot of the stuff with the draft. One of the guys I really like in the draft is the running back out of USC. Nobody's talking about him, partially as I wrote on JoeBucksFan.com, because he's from USC. That's just how we are here in SEC country. We lose sight of these guys. But Ronald Jones II, an immense talent. He showed he could carry the load last year. USC pounded him with 260 carries. Guy responded, 1,500-plus yards, 19 touchdowns. He's averaged 6.1 yards a carry through his career. He started as a true freshman. He's still 20 years old. And he'll be an early second-round pick. I think he's a good complement to Peyton Barber. If the Bucks like Barber as much as I believe they do, and there's no shame in liking Peyton Barber, he finally got a shot, and he showed he could run in this league between the tackles. And a lot of people think he didn't have a very good offensive line to run behind. I don't believe that, but he showed patience, he showed power, he showed grit, he showed short yardage. His pass blocking is getting better. I mean, there's so many people just want to dismiss Peyton Barber as, oh, he sucks. Well, other teams get these guys in the 6th, 7th round undrafted all the time, and they turn into good backs. I think he's okay. But my point is Jones could be that number one guy, but he also has a type of game where he could be a great complement to Peyton Barber as well. He's a home run hitter. And I like him. I like him as a running back. So there. So you got a name out of me at running back that's not Saquon Barkley. Doesn't mean anything is wrong with Geis or some of these other guys, but it just shows the depth. And the Bucs do need a running back. Again, they put themselves in that corner. There's only two on the roster. Charles Sims can't find a job. It's Jaquizz Rodgers and Peyton Barber, and you're desperate. And Maurice Jones-Drew, if you saw the story on JoeBucksFan.com today, he made a comment. He thinks the Bucs are drafting two running backs, which I don't think would be a bad idea at all. Not a bad idea at all. What's wrong with competition? What is wrong with competition? That's why I'm glad that the Bucs kept Will Golston, because he will provide a layer of competition all along that defensive line, especially if he's well-developed by Brenton Buckner, because Golston is still young. Effectively, now he's in a contract year again. He's going to get paid by the Bucs, but he's got no more guaranteed money. And he's got talent. They're in past years, not last year, but in past years, he's was one of the very best against the run in the NFL. And that's the kind of depth you want. It's exciting. Not Will Golston is exciting, but the depth at defensive line is exciting, and to see how they manage that and get the most out of it. Now, I wrote a story this morning on JoeBucksFan.com. I already see some of the comments that it's been misconstrued, but I can't not mention this stuff because the little seeds, little things, these are stuff to consider. This is what we do, right? 24/7 Bucks on JoeBucksFan.com. I was sniffing around last night. I found an old interview, only a few weeks, 2 weeks old or so, 2 weeks old interview from Philadelphia Radio with Vinnie Curry. And Curry clearly had a relationship with these radio hosts, and he's sharing about how he's coming to Tampa and he's excited about the Jason Pierre-Paul trade. And they're talking about his deep, lifelong love of the Eagles. And he's talking about how much he loved it there, grew up there, spent 6 years there, has his family and his people there, blah, blah, blah. You know the story. But here he is now as a Buccaneer because the Eagles, you know, they offered him a contract to stay, but he wanted to make more money. And here he is. Well, nothing wrong with that. I applaud the guy for loving where he was playing. I applaud him for being passionate about his home team. I applaud him for being a fan of his own home team. I mean, there's a lot of kids around these days who they're not fans of the home team. It's part of the problem we have in Tampa. And it goes on in every city. It's the nature of television and fantasy football and access to all the teams. But Vinnie Curry is an Eagles fan. And he said on the radio a couple of weeks ago, "I bleed green." And I think about Michael Johnson, Ghost Johnson, who came here. Then his agent said, well, he really wanted to stay in Cincinnati, but he came here for the money. He mailed it in a lot of ways. The Bucs paid him about $20 million after 1 year and then eating some of his contract. He goes back to Cincinnati. Dude had 5 sacks last year. He has only missed 1 game in 3 years. He's not great, but he's much more productive than he was here. And he's put together a very long NFL career. You don't think we could have used Michael Johnson playing like that here last year or the year before? Sure, we could have. But you got to worry about these free agents a little bit. And I like Curry. Seems like a nice guy. He's known as a work ethic guy. But you know what? So was Michael Johnson before he got to the Bucs. So I'm a little worried. I get a little concerned about these guys, especially Tampa. Tampa's not an easy place where there's a culture of losing and it's hot as hell and you got to be grinding out there and you're turning 30 and you got a big fat check in your wallet. And, you know, you might start thinking, maybe I don't have everything to give anymore, which isn't that what happened to Swaggy Baker? He got fat, came for a fat paycheck. He was turning 30. Now he's lost weight and he's going to Cincinnati. You know, it's the Bucs circus. I'm not rooting against Vinnie Curry, but it's something to keep in mind, and I hope the Bucs got it right this time because it was a huge offseason focus for the team to be dialed into the mentality of players. And I know they put in the work on that front, but mentalities change, and that's just being human, just picking players. However you want to slice this NFL draft coming up, the good general managers, they're hitting at 2 out of 3 in the first first round and second rounders. They're hitting at a 2 out of 3 clip over 3 years or so. Go all three rounds, first three rounds. Yeah, the good ones are hitting also 2 out of 3, 60%, somewhere in there. 62%. The bad ones are under 50 and they're done. So it's a razor thin margin. It's not perfect. You have to get it right. Jason Light has to get this right. And I hope the decisions, though, are driven about long-term health of the team. Light has said 100 times, you can't fix every position every year. And I hope he sticks to that this year. You know what? He's not going to be able to fix every hole perfectly and win a Super Bowl this year. It's just my opinion. So just take the best players. You don't want a tight end, obviously. We don't need to draft a wide receiver. But take the best players and don't worry about some of these holes. Go out and fill them with some veterans, some guys who can at least play, and go from there. But the Bucs, I worry that they've painted themselves into such a corner with running back and cornerback. I hope they make those picks, and I hope they pick the right guys. And that's really what we're all sitting here praying and dialed into for this season. Now, Jameis Winston, we wrote a lot about him on JoeBucksFan.com the last handful of days. I wrote the story that was headlined "Dangerous Mindset of Jameis," because Jameis came out, he retweeted a Tampa Bay Times story that was about the ineffectiveness of DeSean Jackson and what the Bucs have to do, and it looked at some film and other stuff, long thing. Jameis retweets it and says, "We got this. I personally will make sure we show how valuable DeSean Jackson 11 is to our team and the NFL." Now, that sounds nice on the surface. It really does. But you know what? It's a crappy mentality. It's a crappy mentality. I don't care. And you know what, folks? Whoever's listening to this doesn't give a crap whether DeSean Jackson shows his value next year. They don't. They just want to win. And you know what? Maybe DeSean Jackson's value this year is going to be in being a good decoy and really opening up the field and Dirk Cutter properly stretching out the field because of DeSean Jackson and because of his route running. It doesn't have to be about numbers, but for Jameis to say he'll personally make sure we show how valuable Jackson is, it's just the wrong mindset. He can't do that for everybody, so you can't do it for one guy. He can't personally show everybody's value. It's impossible. Just hit the open man. Just execute the play that's in front of you, and everything works. The minute you start worrying about a guy's numbers, you're screwed. It's inevitable that you're going to press, or you're going to feel that guy's pain, feel that guy's questionable attitude. You're going to worry. It's going to affect you on the field. And the minute you're not just taking the play that's in front of you, you're screwed. The great quarterbacks, you think Drew Brees is worried about a guy's numbers? No, he's not. He's just not. You know, Jameis said at the end of last year, I'll read the quote. He said, "I was trying. That's what messed me up. I was trying to throw the ball to Mike Evans the whole game, and that kind of threw me off my game. I wanted him to get that record," Jameis said. Now, we're talking about Mike Evans getting 1,000 yards to close last season and become one of the few guys in NFL history to start his career with 4 consecutive years with 1,000 yards. Now, let's admit it. That's a stupid, immature mentality to be worried about Mike Evans, but it's almost understandable because that was a meaningless game. Now, not a meaningless game to the Bucs, not a meaningless game to the fans, not a meaningless game in the mentality of the team. But the reality on the standings was, yeah, that was meaningless. So, someone's calling me. All right, let's get rid of him. But Jameis is thinking about Mike Evans getting him that record. In some ways, that's nice, but it's very immature. It's very immature to say he did it all game, and Jameis pressed in that game, and there were 2 interceptions thrown that were forced Mike Evans' direction. Not good. We all want to see maturity from Jameis. And that shows a lack of maturity. Worried about DeSean Jackson's numbers? That's not maturity. Because you know what? if Jackson's worried about it, that's a problem. If they go through a couple of games and they're 2-0 and DeSean Jackson has one deep ball for a touchdown and not much else, are we supposed to care? No. So I just want to see Jameis get out of this stuff. I know he's a team guy, but you can go too overboard with that. You see it in other sports. Guys who pass when they should shoot. Steven Stamkos, if you're a Lightning fan, has had a history of that at times. Other players, you know, other sports have done the same kinds of things. I just want to see Jameis relax, worry about the play-by-play basis, the series-by-series basis, and he doesn't have to be the savior for everybody on his team stats-wise. And frankly, he's got too many weapons to worry about. Right? Godwin, Jackson, Evans, hopefully a power running back who's going to be running the ball a lot more and we're going to be passing a lot less. He's got O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. He can't worry about any of these guys. You know, so that was the take there. And, you know, we just want to see Jameis be mature and get the freaking job done. Rondé Barber said it best. If you missed that, it's on JoeBucksFan.com. Rondé Barber said it best. He was asked to evaluate Jameis recently, and he said, I'll read it to you. It's in his fourth year. I mean, it's time. It's time. And it is time. It's time for the Bucks to get out of the stink of losing, get on a better path, fully fix one side of the ball. Because if you think about it, we don't have any side of the ball fixed. Special teams, defense, offense. There's no identity. There's nothing here right now. So that's why I asked for a little patience. See if you can have it. See if you could start thinking long term. See if you can compartmentalize a little bit. I'm not asking you to. I'm not saying you have to. But it's, I don't know. Maybe it's just a different approach to being a fan. A little bit healthier, a little bit easier. But hey, who are we kidding? When the ball kicks off opening day, they better freaking win. They better play hard. They better be one of the toughest teams in the NFL, or the fans will see right through it, and that's what happened last year. They were soft far too often, not playing in their heads way too often, and we just don't want that again. It starts with the draft party is the next big event. The draft party. I'm going to cue it now and go out of the podcast with Justin Pulaski explaining some of the stuff on the draft party. Thank you to Discount Garage Doors, dgdoors.com. And a little special announcement. There's going to be a bonus Monday Morning Joe podcast on Wednesday to make up for last week. So I got more to talk about, some more detail. And I appreciate you guys entertaining my rants here. Podbean, Google Play, iTunes. Those are the different podcast apps and platforms where you can find the podcast, or of course on JoeBucksFan.com. Subscribe for an alert, leave a review. We appreciate you here at JoeBucksFan.com. Talk to you soon.
The 2018 Miller Lite Bucks Uncensored Draft Party is coming up fast, April 26th and 27th. It's a two-night event, but that first night, it's going to be wild. We've got a $20 all-you-can-eat buffet, 2,500-square-foot tent outside, a huge HD LED screen to show the draft, and a DJ pumping tunes all night to keep the party going all night long. We will have giveaways sporadically throughout the night and a major announcement. If you're a Bucks fan, you are going to want to be in attendance for this big announcement we will have that Thursday night. Again, two-night event. It's April 26th and 27th at the Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa off of Southdale Mabry. Join me, Justin Pulaski, the commish for the 2018 Miller Lite Bucks Uncensored Draft Party. And speak softly and carry that big mother
boom, you dump a
stick.